Our talk is titled Propagation of Helianthus verticillatus, the World's Sunflower. And the world sunflower is a native plant. It's native to the wet prairies of Alabama and Tennessee and a little bit of Georgia. And this plant has, this is it, to the picture to the right, you can see it in its natural setting. And this plant has a lot of ornamental potential. And today's talk will discuss the different propagation methods we've been working on to see how to practically propagate it. So it's interesting with this plant. It was actually as early as 1898 thought to be extinct, and then it resurfaced in 1994, and then it was actually listed on the endangered plant list in 2014. And it's ornamentally attractive, one, because it's a very tall standing plant, so it offers a very nice vertical element to the landscape. And then it also has fall flowering, and that's attractive both to a number of different pollinators that are looking for a resource during that time of year. And it has this nice bright yellow flowers. It is perennial, so it comes back every year. And it gets its name world sunflower from the whirling of the leaves, and that also offers a nice ornamental feature to it. So all the next four slides or so, I'll take you through the progression of what to expect with this species in your landscape. This is it coming up in February in the wintertime. It is rhizomaceous, so it starts to come up just as little shoots, and then the clump kind of gets a little bit bigger year after year, and so you can expect it to be a true perennial. And it's a very fast grower. So the picture to the left is in May, and so already just in that amount of time, you can see this is the verticillatus all the way in the back here, and you can see it's almost reaching the fence level. And then just another month later, it's actually grown past the fence size. And so it is a fast grower, and we've taken cuttings from the May plant material and also the June plant material, and the May material is actually a better source for cuttings, we've determined. So this is Bob here, and Bob's standing next to a stand of the helianthus in early August, so you can see by now it's gotten 4 or 5 feet taller than the fence. And then following that in mid to late September is this profuse flowering. So each stem has the ability to produce 20 or more flowers, and it's really just a showstopper when it's in full bloom. One of the problems with it, and this is where in the UF Teaching Gardens I've kind of had to strategically place it, is that it does, because it does get so tall, it'll start to tiller. And so you can see kind of that's what's happening here. And how I get around that is I just put plants in front of it. And so it usually will fall over a little bit if we have a windstorm, but then it will start, it doesn't affect its flowering at all. It'll just start growing vertically and keep adding the flower to the garden, just in a little bit of a different way. So you can see here, these are the little bags that we place on the flower heads, getting ready to collect the seed for our experiments. So this is these are all taken in Bob's yard, by the way. This is Bob's yard in late October to early November. So you can see that winter is starting to come, and we're all the bags are placed over the flower heads. Those are two of Bob's dogs. I'm pretty sure. And so this is after it's finished flowering and before it's fully setting seed. So the seeds were collected in these paper bags, and then they were removed and let to dry at ambient storage conditions. And Bob sent me, this was probably a year ago. We were working together on a different wildflower project, and he said, I have these seeds for you. He knew I loved native plants. And so I did all of the seed work, and for any unknown species that I work with, I kind of design the experiments using the same protocol. So I'll start with a pre-germination viability test where I treat the seeds with tetrazoleum to indicate its initial viability, and then subject 4 reps of 100 seeds to 4 different seasonal temperature regimes, all using a 12-hour photo period and a 28-day germination duration. And then any of the seeds that don't germinate, then I'll treat those again with tetrazoleum to determine if the seeds are viable and to be able to calculate the percent dormancy, total viability, and germination of viable seed. You can see here the germination was, we considered a seed germinated when we could see radical protrusion. The image to the right is actually an X-ray picture that we took to identify how many seeds we started with that were completely filled. So that was an indicator of the health of the seeds and its germination potential. So 95% of the seeds that were collected were filled. So we knew that we were starting with a pretty good source of seeds. These were the results of the germination at the 4 different temperatures, and you can see that of these 4 temperatures, the seeds did germinate well. They germinated rapidly, and there was a little bit of difference in temperature, so the colder temperature did delay germination by 1 to 2 weeks, and then there was a reduction in germination at the warmest temperature, which was 33-24. And so we were only able to achieve 78% germination under that warmer temperature. But overall, regardless of temperature, the seeds did germinate readily. This just looks at that data in a table form. So we were able to calculate the total percent germination. That was after 28 days. And then we were able to, using the TZ results, calculate the percentage of dormancy. So this indicates that the seeds were still viable after the 28 days and probably could germinate if given the right temperature conditions. And then we were able to calculate the time to 50% germination. So this shows us that the colder temperature had a delayed T50 and that the warmer temperature, the top 2 warmest temperatures, that the 50% of the seeds germinated by day 2. So this just kind of gives an overview. Our tetrazoleum tests showed that we started with 91% of viable seeds, and that kind of concurred with the X-ray analysis. And sometimes that can be useful because the TZ test is a destructive test, but the X-ray analysis isn't. So we can X-ray the seeds and then subject those same seeds to the germination tests. And we did see this reduction of warmer temperatures and that the 50% germination was achieved within day 2. One of the things that I also noticed while I was working with this plant in Florida is that it also makes a really nice cut flower. So this is a picture of one of the arrangements that I made with it flowering in the fall. So, of course, with any native plant, especially endangered species, we want to elucidate the propagation protocols using seeds so that we can capitalize on that genetic diversity. But there are a lot of advantages to clonal propagation. One is if you aren't able to collect the seeds during that window of fall collection time in the winter. And then also you can select for certain traits that you want to maintain that phenotype for. And so it was important for us to also use a clonal propagation technique to see how readily it can root. These so Bob did the cutting work in his lab. These were he started with taking cuttings that either had two nodes or four nodes, and he determined that the two node cuttings performed better. They rooted better. This actually shows you the size of the cuttings here, and then so in 3 to 4 weeks, that was the root system that could develop. So it does root readily. The cuttings root better if they're collected from terminal cuttings in the May, and that they're smaller two node cuttings. Bob also, he used a 250 parts per million IAA concentration, which really isn't that high, but appropriate for a herbaceous species. And he used two different time intervals. And so this slide shows that there was no difference between 5 or 10 minutes. And also this shows that even in water, they root the same in water. It's just there's more roots per cutting when you're using the auxin. So it's possible to propagate this clonally with or without auxin. So these were some calculations Bob did. If you're looking at just propagating a single stem, that stem has the ability to produce over 9 new cuttings in a pot per year. And then if you multiply that by 4 years, you could achieve 6,561 cuttings from a single cutting. So in addition to the rooting propagation, we also wanted to look into the feasibility of clonal production through tissue culture. And this really was to be able to work more on selecting different traits and also for selecting disease resistance. So this species was found to have powdery mildew, and so that was something that Bob was very interested in selecting for resistance to that. And so he set up a number of different tissue culture experiments using both axillary buds, like you can see on the right, and also using indirect organogenesis through leaf tissue. And he was able to achieve rooting in both systems, but shoot proliferation was a problem in the axillary bud micropropagation, and then contamination was a big problem. Almost 75% of the plants were contaminated in the indirect shoot organogenesis protocol. So that's kind of something that he's still developing, but he does have it in culture, and he has achieved all of the stages of micropropagation from the donor selection to the establishment, multiplication, and rooting. So these are some pictures just to show you some of the problems that we're seeing. The one in the middle is a plant that's infected with a powdery mildew disease, some leaf spot damage here on the top, and so he's actually been able to identify some plants that have a better form, that have had that more purplish color in the stems, which is ornamentally attractive, and also that has this powdery mildew resistance. So this is very encouraging for selecting upon these traits for this species. And finally, he also has found some natural variants. So these are from seed propagation. And you can see, like this one to the left, where the petals of the flower are completely separated, is very attractive. And maybe that warrants more research to see if the plant performance, having that flower, outperforms a plant with the overlapped petals, as you can see on the right. So this is an ongoing experiment. We believe that the species is self-incompatible, and there is a poster. Is the student in the room that's presenting the poster here? There's a poster on the pollinator visitation of the species that one of our master's students is giving from Tennessee. So if you're really interested in that, you can go see his poster. and also to continue characterizing the different genotypes of clonal and breeding lines, selecting for these new novel genotypes, and then finally working out our development of the tissue culture techniques so that we can have a higher success rate. And that concludes our talk. I hope I did a good enough job filling in for Bob at the last minute. Let me see how I'm doing on time. And I took up all of my time. But I will be here. I don't think we have the last presenter, so I will stay towards the end of the session, and I'm glad to answer any questions. So thank you.